It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, Wisconsin goes Hollywood in a new exhibit from the Wisconsin Historical Museum.
First, the contenders for the Republican nomination gathered in Milwaukee last night for their fourth debate. The questions focused on the economy with attention to the minimum wage and tax reform. Among the candidates who stood out last night was Marco Rubio, who got big applause when he praised vocational training.
Here's the best way to raise wages. Make America the best place in the world to start a business or expand an existing business. Tax reform and regulatory reform. Bring our debt under control. Fully utilize our energy resources so we can reinvigorate manufacturing. Repeal and replace Obamacare. And make higher education faster and easier to access, especially vocational training. For the life of me, I don't know why we have stigmatized vocational education. Welders make more money than philosophers. We need more welders and less philosophers. And if we do that, if we do this, we will be able to increase wages for millions of Americans, and we will be able to leave everyone better off without making anyone worse off.
It's time for our weekly look at the latest in national politics with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. Also today, it's Veterans Day. Yesterday, the Senate passed its first spending bill this year, approving veterans' benefits and military construction.
And we'll take a look at the appeals court ruling blocking President Obama's executive action on immigration. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
So Marco Rubio getting big applause for that comment last night about vocational training, comparing the wages of welders and philosophers. Just to focus in on that line, what do you make of that moment?
This is a typical thing, among Republican voters. They hate those Northeast liberal elite college types, and philosophers are those people who supposedly stand out in the crowd and say things without actually doing anything. So, of course, that's going to be a big applause line among Republican voters. And it's a typical remark from Marco Rubio, who knows how to speak to Republican voters during these debates. I don't think there's been a debate so far where Rubio wasn't one of the top three debaters, and last night was no exception. I'm not sure it was his best debate, but it certainly was up there. Jeb Bush, for instance, would trade any of Marco Rubio's debates if you asked him to, and that line is an example why. He just speaks to the Republican primary audience.
Well, speaking of Jeb Bush, people have been looking for him to have a breakaway debate performance, a big night. Some people said he looked a little livelier last night. What did you think?
Sure. I mean, comparatively speaking, he was livelier. He didn't go after Rubio, which is smart. He went after Rubio last time, which was stupid because Rubio knows how to handle those attacks and then turn him into applause lines. So, yeah, I think Bush did do better, but the bar was set so low. I guess the one thing you can say is if you hear the reports out of the Bush camp, the donors aren't going to leave them in droves. This at least keeps them afloat for another month. It was not a disaster as the last one was, but I don't think it was a home run. Maybe it was a single, but I don't think it drove in any runs.
So this is the first debate after the kerfuffle last time around where Republicans complained about the moderating, the questions that were being asked. Did you think there was a significant tone shift in the way that this debate was moderated?
Sure. I mean, certainly the people at Fox Business would like you to believe there was a change in tone, and they mentioned or alluded to the CNBC debate any number of times that this debate is going to be different. And I think, if you're a Republican or a Republican primary voter, you have a little more affiliation for a Fox entity than you do for an NBC-related network. So this is not a big surprise that the Republican voters and the Republican candidates themselves were much bigger fans of this debate. And you know what? It was a relatively substantive debate, so they're not coming out of nowhere with this.
So another emerging narrative of last night is that the Republicans seem more cohesive. They seem to gather together on issues, and instead of attacking each other and engaging in infighting, that they presented more of a unified front, maybe going after Democrats and the supposed proposed nominee, Hillary Clinton. Do you think that that's true? Did this seem like a more unified Republican party?
Sure. I would say it was true. You didn't really see a lot of fighting in the main debate. I think there was a little bit. For instance, Ted Cruz made a remark about sugar subsidies that was clearly aimed at Marco Rubio and maybe previewing some fight they may have down the line. But overall, Republican primary voters don't like when the candidates go after each other. They like when the candidates go after Hillary Clinton. And that is something that I think that these candidates have learned, and that's what they did. I will say one candidate who clearly didn't learn that lesson was Bobby Jindal in the quote-unquote JV debate or the undercard debate, where he did go after Chris Christie. But Jindal has his own sort of methods in what he's aiming for. And I think overall it was just a successful night for most of the Republican candidates, except for maybe John Kasich, who decided that it would be nice to interrupt everybody every 5 seconds.
What about Rand Paul? How do you think he did? There were some commentary out there that he seemed to be a little bit on the outside of the other contenders last night.
Yeah, you know, Rand Paul's an interesting candidate and an interesting personality. Remember, his father, Ron, ran twice the last two times and sort of stood out as this libertarian, isolationist wing type of guy and was able to get a number of votes doing that, but never really came close to the nomination. Rand Paul, at the beginning of the cycle, seemed to say, you know what, I want a chance at the nomination. I'm going to kind of temper my views on some of these foreign policy bits that maybe not exactly in line with the Republican base. But I think he realized that really wasn't getting him anywhere. It wasn't who he was. And so he decided that he was going to be who he was, which is a more libertarian-leaning Republican, perhaps a little more isolationist. And yes, that did end up with him fighting with some of his fellow Republicans, but he was also able to get a number of applause lines, including getting a pretty good lump in against Donald Trump about TPP and whether or not China was involved in that deal, which it wasn't, which Paul pointed out.
So there are a lot of these Republican debates. So the next one is December coming up. But what do you expect the candidates to be doing? And are these debates getting less important, or are they going to start getting more important?
I think they're going to get more important. You know, and one of the reasons that they're going to get more important is, you know, right now most people are not really paying attention to this Republican race. The voting is still a number of months away. The Iowa caucus isn't until February 1st. If you get a bump right now, that really doesn't mean anything. You want a bump later on when people are actually paying attention and determining who they're going to vote for. So I expect that these debates are actually going to get more important as we go on.
We're talking to Harry Enten right now, senior political writer and analyst for 538, talking about the latest in national politics. Right now we're talking about the debate. And you're talking about those numbers maybe getting more important. We'll stick with numbers for a while and talk about polling. We're a year out or so from the election. Should we be paying attention to polls right now, or should we just let it wash over us?
I'd say the general election polls. This is something I've written on. The general election polls are things that you just don't want to pay attention to at this point. If we paid attention to them, we would have thought, for instance, that George Herbert Walker Bush in the 1992 campaign was going to walk all over Bill Clinton. That did not happen. We would have thought his son, George W. Bush, was going to walk all over Al Gore. That did not happen. So the polls at this point have an average error of about 10.5 percentage points, and most of the Republican matchups versus Hillary Clinton are very, very tight right now. So it really can go either way. No side really has an advantage, and historically speaking, even if one side did have an advantage, it wouldn't mean anything.
And when do they start mattering? When do the numbers start to be a little more meaningful?
Well, I would say two times. Number one, when the candidates are actually selected by both sides, so, you know, March or April, then you'll see a real kind of climb in the predictability of the polls. And then when they really take off and you really, really have a good idea is after the conventions. Who's ever leading after the conventions is probably going to win the race, unless it's a very, very tight race that could go, you know, if it's a 1 or 2 point race, then it can go either way. But if, say, one candidate has a 7 point lead coming out of the conventions, that candidate's probably going to win the presidency.
I just realized we talked for 10 minutes about the GOP debate, and we didn't talk about Donald Trump at all. What do you think that means? Anything?
I think it does mean that sort of the novelty factor has worn off a little bit with Trump. I think that he also really wasn't that boisterous. I think he's becoming a more serious candidate. I think he sees that he's leading in the polls and realizes, you know, I don't have to do these crazy outlandish things or speak so out of turn in order to keep my standing. I have an actual chance to win, and in order to win, I have to be perceived as at least somewhat serious, and to be perceived as somewhat serious, I have to tone it down a little bit, be a real candidate. And I think Trump recognized that. And I think other candidates realize going after Trump isn't necessarily a quote-unquote Trump card. Excuse my terrible pun there. But, Rick Perry did it. It didn't really work. Bobby Jindal has done it. It hasn't really worked. So they decide, you know, just leave him alone. We'll go the way that we want to go. And Trump is more than happy to allow that to happen.
Okay, so you're saying Trump positioning himself as a more serious candidate, and to that end, he appeared last week on Saturday Night Live.
I mean, this is one of those funny things, right? I guess people rediscovered that SNL's glory days were long behind them at this point. But, you know, I think what Trump also is doing is he's sort of expanding the electorate. Look, President Obama did a terrific job during his presidency of reaching outside into untraditional media sources, you know, talk shows on radio programs that normally wouldn't have politicians on, stuff like that. And Trump is doing the same thing. A lot of people tuned in to watch that SNL episode and sort of put Trump in a different light. I think most people didn't think it was particularly good television, but it did show that Trump was able to make fun of himself. And to that end, for someone who's normally thought of as, oh, I'm all high and mighty, it was a good humanizing experience for him.
So moving on now to look at legislation. Today's Veterans Day, and the Senate passed its first spending bill of the year yesterday to fund veterans benefits and military construction in 2016. Tell us about that first bit of spending action.
So, yeah, they basically, you know, they're going to spend $79 billion. I think it's 79.7 if we're going to get exact. And it's basically, you know, towards veterans programs, making sure that when veterans come back, they'll be able to have the programs that are necessary for them to live fruitful lives or put them right on, or at least put them on the right path. There were some problems with passing this earlier in the year where Democrats wanted to tie it in with a two-year, you know, spending program. But eventually, look, if there's one sort of group of people that you don't want to go after in American politics, it's veterans. People like to hear that veterans are being taken care of. And that's the reason you saw the spending bill pass in the Senate 93-0. And the reason why there were some senators who didn't vote on it is because there's some senators who are running for president. And there are also a senator running for governor down in Louisiana, and David Vitter. So pretty much everyone was on board with this. And it's a nice sort of thing that we have going into Veterans Day. I think most people would agree that we don't treat our veterans with enough respect. And so this hopefully be able to put us on a good pathway to at least helping solve that problem a little bit.
Any indication that this indicates things moving through Congress a little more easily right now, or is this sort of the exception?
Yeah, you know, I mean, yes. I mean, it's certainly not a bad sign, but again, it's veterans. I mean, if they hadn't passed this, then I'd say we were in major trouble. But the fact that they did, I don't necessarily think means that, oh, the government's going to, you know, we're not going to have a problem going forward in December with, you know, sort of negotiations over the budget. That I think is a step too far, but it's certainly not a bad sign.
So looking at the White House now, the president met with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu on Monday after a very tense summer between the Obama administration and Israel. What was that meeting like?
You know, I think the meeting was basically, look, guys, Israel's our number one ally in the region. I think most Democrats and most Republicans will agree on that. And it's basically ensuring that that Israel gets the funding, the assistance that they want from the United States government. And it seems like we're moving in that direction, a multi-year deal. But certainly Benjamin Netanyahu and Barack Obama are not besties by any stretch of the imagination. And Republicans like to sort of bash that over the head of Obama. So I think this is just a good sort of PR play for both sides, where Netanyahu's going to say, look, we want to have both parties in the United States on our side. And President Obama is going to say, don't worry, you know, Democratic base that is, you know, that likes Israel. We're going to fund them. We disagreed on the Iran deal, but everything is going to be okay. And we have Israel's back when it comes to Syria and when it comes to the Palestinian territories.
And we leave it there. Thanks a lot, Harry. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
That was Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time with the latest in national politics.